Morning, Oregon, and happy Friday. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for joining me, and I hope you enjoy the show today. Today's episode is part two of a two-part presentation of the story of the worst naturally occurring flash flood in United States history as measured by body count. The day in 1903 when tiny, purling Willow Creek rose up and drowned nearly half of the town of Heppner, Oregon. By naturally occurring, of course, I mean unrelated to a dam failure like the one that unleashed the Johnstown flood in 1889 in Pennsylvania. Here we go. As the residents of the town of Heppner peered out into the storm cloud-dimmed sky watching the lightning flashes, the water that the storm had unleashed a few miles upstream from them was on the move. Later, visitors were able to actually see the channels it carved in the newly denuded hills as it poured down toward the town and the boulders it ripped out of the ground. Most of the rainwater ended up in the headwaters of the Balm Fork of Willow Creek, but the main fork of Willow Creek got lots as well. Balm Fork merges into the main stem of Willow Creek just upstream from Heppner. Most summers, the water there is ankle-deep. On this occasion, though, the water coming down Balm Fork was probably 10 feet high, if not more. As the water had run down the canyon, debris had clogged every fence and bridge across the creek bed and held back the flood for a second or two while more water poured in and piled up. By the time it reached Willow Creek, the crest was an enormous slug of water, just thundering down the mountain. Witnesses compared it to a barrel rolling down the hill, thick with flotsam and debris. It hit Willow Creek with tremendous force, gouging a brand new cove in the opposite bank of the creek, which you can still visit today. It was all done in one instant. The swirling there delayed the flood more. More water rushed in. The slug of water got even bigger. Then it rolled on down into Heppner. The first thing it met in Heppner was a new steam laundry built cantilevered over Willow Creek at the upstream end. This laundry was stout and well-built, and it held the water dammed up for a few more seconds before giving way and releasing the water into the town. By that time, the wall of water was taller than the houses it was smashing into. Eyewitnesses gave estimates of between 30 and 50 feet. A few people saw what was happening in time to do something. One heroic man jumped on his horse and set out hell for leather downstream through the town, shouting a warning to the people in the houses, "Flood! Run to the hills! Flood! Run to the hills!" It's extremely unlikely that this man, or these men, there may have been two, survived the flood, as the water would have chased them down before they could reach the city limits. Also, no one today knows who they were. But a number of survivors credit their shouted warning with saving their lives. Those who did not hear or heed this warning were apt to find themselves being carried downstream inside their houses, crushed by collapsing timbers or drowned in filth. Among those who were caught in the torrent, survivors were few. One lucky family rowed downstream in their submerged house up to their necks in water and were able to escape when it fetched up against another structure. But for the most part, those caught in the flood drowned or were crushed as their houses were carried away and broken apart by the awesome hydraulic forces. When the floodwaters came, about 200 people took refuge in the Palace Hotel. The palace was built of stone and brick and was solid enough to resist the waters. Among these were Leslie Matlock and Bruce Kelly. As soon as the waters receded, the two of them hurried to a livery stable for horses. Luckily, it was on high ground, and took off at a gallop downstream, racing the floodwaters in an effort to warn the downstream towns of Lexington and Ione. The telegraph and telephone lines were, of course, out of service now. They had to cut their way through several fences, which slowed them down, and they got to Lexington a few minutes after the waters did. Luckily, it wasn't hailing in Lexington, so the residents heard the water coming and got out of the way. They passed the crest on the way to Ione, though, and got the warning out in time. Nobody in either downstream town was killed in the flood, but the floodwaters contaminated every well they flowed over and caused an outbreak of typhoid fever that killed at least 18 more people over the following month or two. And when it was over, the survivors in Heppner had an awful job ahead of them. A quote from the Portland Oregonian, reprinted in Den Oudin's article in Oregon Historical Quarterly, sums it up. Scenes at Heppner are indescribable in their gruesomeness, their anguish, and their awful desolation. No pen can exaggerate the horrors they present. Every heap of debris may contain a human forming decomposition. Many do reveal such spectacles when uncovered, and meanwhile, Willow Creek, as if to mock the dead, has returned to a purling brooklet. Residents of nearby towns and cities flocked to Heppner with food and manpower as well as financial contributions. A kitty passed in Portland swelled up to such a large sum that the residents of Heppner asked them to keep part of it and set it aside for the next emergency. But Heppner needed the help. It was a horrible recovery job, especially because babies and toddlers made up a significant proportion of the dead. You can imagine what it must have been like to be a survivor or a volunteer from a nearby town, approaching a collapsed wall of a demolished house, lifting it up, praying there's not another dead baby under it. Today, nearly a century and a quarter later, the debris is gone and the damage long since repaired or cleaned up. But you can still see the effects of that flood with a stroll through the Heppner Cemetery, located on the hill above the town. On headstone after headstone, you will find, carved with chilling insistence, the same date of death, June 14, 1903. Key sources in this story included works by Joanne Green Bird, Bob Den Ouden, and the history guy, Lance Geiger, who published a story about it on his YouTube channel on June 14, 2023, on the 120-year anniversary of the flood. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. And by the way, if you haven't yet, check out our Offbeat Oregon books. They're a lot like these columns, only expanded and updated to take advantage of a less restrictive format. We've got Heroes and Rascals of Old Oregon, Love, Sex, and Murder in Old Oregon, Bad Ideas and Horrible People in Old Oregon, and eventually the plan is for 8 of them to be out, although how many there are out right now depends on when you hear this. They're a lot of fun and would look great on your bookshelf. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do or to find the full citations and visuals that go with today's show. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Offbeat Oregon History episodes are uploaded every weekday morning at around 6 a.m., so it'll be a couple of days before you get your next fix. But of course, Monday morning will be here before we know it. And that's the latest news from here in Offbeat Oregon's Sulphur Springs studio. So now it's time for you and me both to go out there and fill up the rest of the day and the weekend with good stuff. Bye now.